Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to this special edition of the Failed Critics podcast for Solo, a Star Wars story, the latest in the Star Wars franchise under Disney. I'm Steve Norman. I am joined, as I always am, for a Star Wars podcast by Paul Field.
Good evening, chaps.
And Dave Valentine.
Good evening, chaps. Thank you for having me back.
Not a problem. Always a pleasure. Just to make it clear to everyone, when we get on to reviewing the film, it will contain spoilers. We're just going to go straight in with a spoiler-filled review of the film, although we are going to start off with a traditional Star Wars quiz, which will be between me and Dave, with Paul hosting proceedings.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Is it 1-1 or 2-1? Because I know, Steve, you absolutely smashed the last one.
Knowledge was second to none on that one.
Dave, you've definitely won one, though, as well.
I've won two. Steve won the last one.
I think mine and Dave's knowledge field seem to be quite different. If you were to ask me about characters and things, then I'm quite good. Dave seems to be quite good on, like, technical aspects of the films.
The more sort of behind-the-scenes production side of it, definitely. I noticed that. Yeah.
I've tried to sort of mix it up a bit, and we have... I also got you both to supply a question for each other, and we got a couple of listener questions in as well. So let's crack on a nice round one. Steve, do you want to go first or do you want to go second?
I am gonna apply the pressure and go first.
Okay, first question then, Steve. Name any actor other than obviously Harrison Ford who originally auditioned for the role of Han Solo.
Tom Selleck.
No?
That was Indiana Jones, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. That's worth half a point.
There are four on this list. So, Dave, I'm going to pass it over to you to get a bonus point.
Pretty sure Christopher Walken, if I remember.
No?
Oh.
No. Neil, I thought you were going to get quite a few of these. Al Pacino, Kurt Russell, Sylvester Stallone, and Robert Englund.
Robert Englund. Flipping heck. He's a good actor.
All right. I'd have been interested to see Pacino and Kurt Russell do it.
Yeah, you know, that's why I like doing this quick, because it's not just about the questions. You actually get to learn new Star Wars stuff. This is a great one. Dave.
Yes.
You ready?
Yes.
In the Dark Horse comic, Into the Unknown, who discovers the remains of Han Solo after he's crashed on Earth? They're found by this person while he's hunting for Bigfoot, who turns out to be Chewbacca.
Oh my god. Well, I don't do the comics, as you know, but my guess is it Indiana Jones?
It is Indiana Jones.
Oh dear.
Point for you, Dave. Well done. Steve.
Yes.
What was the off-screen reason for freezing Han in carbonite?
They didn't know whether Harrison Ford would return for Return of the Jedi, so they had to find a way of getting him out of the series if he didn't come back.
Correct. Well done. And Dave, this is a good one as well, actually. Okay. What was George Lucas's original design for Han Solo?
Oh, he looked like him. He had a beard, didn't he? Is that what you mean? Or was he an alien? Because I've definitely seen a sketch of an early incarnation of Han Solo, and it looks weirdly like late 70s George Lucas.
No, I'm going to pass it across to Steve. That's nothing like that at all.
Only like a green pointy-eared alien.
He was a green alien, yes, well done. He had no nose and huge gills.
Mm.
So well done, Steve. You clawed it back. So that was the Han Solo round, and you got a point each there. No, two. Dave got one. Steve's got two. Sorry. Okay, so I've been on eBay today to see what Star Wars people have been spending their money on, and it's a guess how much they spent round. So all I'll tell you is that the amounts get bigger as we go up. There are four of these.
Okay.
Dave.
Yep.
A Lego Millennium Falcon Ultimate Collector's Edition. I don't think these have been out that long.
Couldn't have been.
How much for a Lego Millennium Falcon Ultimate Collector's Edition?
Let's we say £75.
£75. Steve?
£300.
£2,056.
Oh, God.
Jesus.
Point for Steve. So, a 1977 Greedo Kenner action figure in its box. Steve, what do you reckon?
£6,000 sterling.
Dave?
£4,000.
I tricked you there. It was 2,280. It was only a little bit more, so that's a point for Dave. Bib Fortuna in a red cape, original cardback figure. What do you reckon, Steve?
£4,000.50.
Dave?
£3,500.
Steve, you were nearly bang on. It's £3,985. So well done. Another point for you. Dave,
yeah.
How much for a life-size Chewbacca statue?
Oh, my word. let's go... Should we go £9,000?
What do you think, Steve?
Is it anatomically correct?
It's pass. It's fucking massive.
Because there's some weird perverts out there.
Does it have three holes and realistic hair?
If it's got a full-on Wookiee appendage, then I reckon £7,500.
Point for Dave. It's £11,275.
And people are actually buying these things.
These are sold, completed listings. We've got a couple of listener questions here, which are worth 2 points each. Dave,
uh-huh.
Would you like a question from Tony Black, or would you like a question from Upper Tier Steve?
Oh, Upper Tier Steve.
Okay. Which Dad's Army character is Daisy Ridley related to?
Oh, that's Godfrey. Arnold Ridley, yeah.
It is Godfrey and Arnold Ridley. 2 points for you, Dave. Well done.
Thank you.
Steve.
That's a weird alternate universe, isn't it? She's related to the character from Dad's Army and not the actor.
What's the name of the old Naboo governor in The Phantom Menace?
Governor, he's the old white guy with a rubbish beard and wizard cloak, isn't he?
That's the one.
Governor, I don't know.
His name is Sio Bibble.
Jesus Christ.
And Tony sent that in because he wanted me to say Sio Bibble. So no points there, Steve, unfortunately. But thank you to Steve and Tony for sending those in. Okay, this is a take it in turns on this one. So, Steve.
Yes.
These are just general Star Wars questions. Which animal was almost used to play Yoda?
Frog.
Frog. No. Do you want to have a guess, Dave?
I guess like a chimp. I'm just thinking something they might be able to train on the set, but I don't know. Yeah, a chimp.
It's a monkey. I'll give you the point for that.
Aren't chimps and monkeys different?
I know, but it's near enough. Dave,
yeah.
Name either of the real languages used to make Ewok.
Well... I'm gonna go Vietnamese, because weren't they kind of based on the Viet Cong? I know it's very dodgy ground. But
you are so close yet wrong. Steve, do you want to have a guess? There's two languages that were used to make Ewok.
If he's close, then something like Laos and what else is down that way? Cambodian.
It's Tibetan and Nepalese.
Okay.
So no points there. Steve, your question. Who's banned from attending all official Star Wars events because George Lucas finds him annoying?
I don't know. William Shatner?
No.
Is it you, Paul?
It is me, no. Do you know who it is, Dave?
It could be anyone, but... Because the only annoying person I can really think of is Anthony Daniels, but he's at all of those events.
And all he's got left.
Exactly.
It's David Prowse.
Oh, that's a shame. Oh, I like that. I like David Prowse.
Dave, your question.
Oh, yeah.
The Jedi Council has how many members?
12.
It is 12, Dave. Well done.
Don't all councils have 12 people now?
It's just one of those easy, like jury members and disciples, of, you know.
Fellowship of Rings.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
We don't talk about that series on this show. Steve.
Yes.
What are the last words spoken in Empire?
Is it something like...
It's not something like, I want it exact.
We'll contact you when we get to the rendezvous point.
No, you're barking up the wrong tree.
Because the last thing is, Lando and someone are flying off in the Falcon because they're going to track down Han, and Luke and Leia and the droids are like looking out from a rebel ship over some space.
That's all correct, but that's not what's said. Do you want to have a guess, Dave?
I thought Steve was on it. I thought it had the word rendezvous in it or something like, we'll let you know when we get there. No, I can't remember.
May the Force be with you.
Oh, is it really? one of those obscure little lines from the Star Wars series.
Dave.
Yeah.
On Dagobah in the cave, what does Luke see behind the mask?
Himself?
Is himself. That, well done. Point, yeah.
Oh, if my next question's not well easy, I'm really curious.
It is, actually. Well, I'm thinking of the listeners as well. I can't have them all, like, really. Steve, what animals attach themselves to the Millennium Falcon?
In what?
When they're in the asteroid.
Oh, Minox.
It is Minox. Well done.
When he said gun darks, that would have been embarrassing, wouldn't it?
This is a good one, this one. How many bounty hunters are on the Executor when the rebels are hiding in the asteroid field?
Six.
It is six, Dave. Bloody hell, well done.
Can you name
them? There's bonus points here for both of you. I will let you take it in turns to name them other than Boba Fett.
Boss.
Dave? Boss for a point, Steve.
Dengar.
Yes, Steve. Point for you.
IG-88.
Yes, Dave. Point for you.
There's two left, isn't there now?
Yep.
Dog the.
Do who? What?
Dog the bounty hunter.
No, Dave. I'll let you have one more guess.
Alan.
No, the last two are Zookas and Forlom.
Oh, yeah, those guys. One of them's like a big bug, like a big fly.
Whose question is it? It's Dave's.
Yeah.
Who did Obi-Wan and Yoda give Leia to?
Organa. Bail Organa, is that his name? Played by Jimmy Smith.
It is Bail Organa. Well done. Steve. What is the name of the planet the clones were made on?
Kamino.
It is Kamino. Well done. Right, I've got Catherine here totting up scores at the moment, so let me see where we are at the moment. Dave is on 12, and Steve is on 7. Okay, I've got your the questions that you've given each other here. So, Dave.
Yeah.
What is the Cantina Band's actual name?
Is it Lopty Neck? Or was that the song?
No.
No, I can't remember the name of the band.
Do you want to tell him, Steve?
Ferg and Dan and the Modal Notes.
Oh, my God. Couldn't have been it for a year. I wouldn't have remembered that.
I tell you what, and it really annoys me that in Force Awakens, in Last Jedi, and in Solo, they had an opportunity to bring them back just in one of the bars or cantinas playing that song, and they didn't. I thought, just put them in there, jamming away.
So iconic, yeah.
Yeah, never mind.
Steve, bizarrely, the question that Dave set for you is also music-based. What's the name given to the genre of music played by the Max Rebus Band in Jabba's Palace?
Palace Funk.
No, it's jizz. Because apparently Max Rebo is a jizz whaler. And there's a sentence I never thought I'd be saying.
Aren't we all really? And we've all done some jizz wailing. Oh my God. Time.
And when I Googled that, I had to be very careful on the links that I clicked on.
Mate, after your search history, I think that's the least of your bloody worries. But guys, that is the end of the quiz. And Dave.
Thrashed him.
Thrashed him.
I'm back.
Can't we just do absolutely. More quiz? Like, I quite enjoyed that. And just not review the film, just do some quiz.
The tie break, if you wanted to go for it, was what's as of the 28th of May, what's the box office numbers?
In what, dollars?
Dollars.
It's not much, is it? I'm going to go 169. Nice.
Was it 86 million?
Worldwide is $168 million. You're a one out, Dave.
One out, not bad.
That's it. That's your Star Wars quiz. Now until what's the next film?
Oh, God knows what. Chewbacca's Excellent Adventure. Who knows what we're going to get next? Yoda's Day Off.
Yoda's Day Off.
Weekend at
Jabba's. I'd watch that. Well, the next Solo film is going to be Weekend at Jabba's, isn't it?
Well, it could well be. The next one, it looks like it's scheduled, is going to be Episode 9, which is out December next year. And then the untitled Boba Fett film is also scheduled for 2020, and that's all they've scheduled so far.
Okay.
I know there's a lot more in the works, but what's actually happening? Who knows? On to the film itself then. So Solo, A Star Wars Story, was the second movie that has been released under the Disney banner that is not part of the Skywalker saga. It is a origin story of sorts of Han Solo, how he met Chewbacca, how he met Lando, how he attained the Millennium Falcon, how he made the Kessel Run, etc., etc. As we said earlier, this review will contain spoilers. First things first, what do we all think of it, Paul?
Dave's good. Well, I'm going to say I really, really enjoyed it. We need to talk about where we saw it and stuff as well, and if there was, you know, people dressed up and what have you. So I... First showing I saw was at the English cinema in Vienna in 3D, and there was barely anyone in there. It was literally the first showing in the country, as far as I can make out. They are not big on Star Wars in Austria, I can tell you that.
Was that the porn cinema?
No. Well, that was very funny. Because I wanted to go and see it again in 2D, and I ended up like after a few clicks of looking at Austrian cinemas on the Viennese nudie cinema, which was hilarious. But yeah, and then I saw it again yesterday. I went over to Hastings and saw it in 2D. But there was definitely no, there's just nothing. It was nearly empty.
No, so, I mean, there were midnight releases. I didn't go for this one for a midnight showing. I just went a standard afternoon one, and there was no weirdos dressed up. It was sort of half full.
Okay, Dave?
I did the midnight screening, which makes me sound like a giant geek, but all it is because I'm just terrified of spoilers. Because all you've got to do is go on Twitter the day after, and you've only got to type in the letter S, and it will come up with a big spoiler. Went at midnight, no dressing up. There were a mere 15... other people in there, all men, I think, as well.
Wow, that's
it's pathetic. Good.
And you've used
the nudie cinema.
Yeah, you've used the same cinema for all of these, haven't you?
That's right. Yes.
And I'm guessing that must be the lowest attendance by some margin.
It's kind of like halved each time. Like Force Awakens, absolutely heaving. Rogue One, you know, three quarters. Last Jedi, two thirds, whatever. And this new one, yeah, 15 people. I don't know if it's because it's a weekday midnight screening or have people lost interest in the franchise. I don't know.
I don't know, but that is quite telling, though, isn't it? Because you've used the same venue each time. Yours is a great barometer of the level of interest.
Exactly.
But that aside, I'm going to have to say that do you know what? I really, really enjoyed it to the point where I went back to see it again.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. It was like a 6-7 out of 10 film. It's not, I liked Rogue One more, but I probably preferred it to The Last Jedi. It was good. It was good fun without, you know, it was fine. The fears about it were allayed. I said on set the tape last night that I think people have to stop worrying now when directors change or there's problems in production and reshoots and everything, because it's happened in a number of films now and the films have turned out to be okay. There were problems with it, but generally it's good.
I wasn't so keen. I thought the first two acts were really, really boring and it only got good in the last third. And I had the same feelings that I did about Rogue One. First two thirds, really, really boring. Final act, it kind of eventually gets there and becomes interesting and exciting and a bit more engaging. But again, I don't hate it because it's Star Wars. And like I say, I'm not a geek, but it is just that thing of taking you back to being young and it being the whole nostalgia of it. And certainly for want of a better phrase, a rush job. I thought Ron Howard did a decent job because it can't be easy to pretty much remake something from scratch within he only had like 5 months to do it, I think.
Mm. Well, I didn't mind the opening act, the introduction to Han and Kira, and I thought Emilia Clarke was really good.
I disagree. I don't think she can act.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
I thought she did.
I think
she's
terrible in this and terrible in Game of Thrones. I've not seen her in anything else, really.
I thought she was fine. And Alden, how do you pronounce his surname?
Aaron Reich.
Aaron Reich?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought he it took me literally just a few minutes to believe that he was a young Han Solo. I thought he managed to pull that off really well.
And Donald Glover as Lando was nearly as
he's
good
as the best one.
He's nearly as good as Billy Dee Williams as Lando.
He even did the voice. He managed to get the mannerisms, the voice.
Yeah.
He is an extremely talented person, though.
Annoyingly talented. Is there anything that guy can't do?
When you've got one of these mates like who are just amazing at every sport, so they're really good at football, they'll be in the cricket team in the summer, then go and knock a really good round on the golf course as well. And, you know, he's like one of those. Just like, fucking hell, really? Can't he be rubbish at something?
But I agree with you about Alden Ehrenreich. It's like there was so much pressure and those shoes are pretty much the biggest you could fill. And we all had those concerns, but he did a very decent job and certainly was very low down on any list of problems that I had with the film.
And it's difficult as well because he's not playing the Han Solo we know from the original trilogy. He's playing a younger and perhaps more naive version of him as well. So he's not playing exactly the same guy. It's not like he's, it's not like we're seeing a Star Wars film that's set a year before A New Hope, and he's playing essentially the same guy as Harrison.
Oh, no. Think about how different you would have been, you know, 20 years ago or whatever, and me and Dave. I mean, completely different people, so. But in terms of that sort of opening scene and the attempted escape, I thought it was good. I really enjoyed it. This is where the first sort of issue I had, and maybe you guys might be able to help me here. So when they're trying to escape Corellia, and they're going to bribe that guard to get passage on a freighter.
Yeah.
So when that kind of goes a little bit wrong, he goes through to what is effectively departures, I guess, but then doesn't even try to get onto a freighter, and then suddenly finds a Empire recruitment office, which I don't care which galaxy you're in, that isn't something you find in a departure lounge. it didn't make sense.
I think it's because the planet is run by the Empire. But it did seem strange that bit was, now you mention it, was after you went through the departure gate, essentially. It would have been before that, surely. But anyway, it's a minor thing. But yeah, I get what you mean now. But that bit leads on to how he got his surname. What do we think of that? That's coming for some criticism. I didn't mind, actually.
I didn't mind at the time, but the more I think about it, the less I like it, because it is so on the nose. You know, his name's Han. He's on his own. Let's call you Han Solo. But now it's canon. We can't ever do anything about it.
Nope.
But I didn't mind. I like the way that, like, some of the people in the Empire weren't just outwardly, outright, you know, dicks.
Yeah.
Like, he was having a bit of a... Like, obviously, you picture the Empire, perhaps quite rightly, because they are like a dictatorship run by some evil people. But you just picture everyone in any kind of authority there is just a horrible bastard. And he was just sort of he was having a bit of a laugh with him and wished him good luck. He's like, oh, hang on.
Exactly. He put a sort of human face on the Empire, which I imagine in wartime...
Maybe it's not something we should encourage, but...
Well, exactly, yeah. But before we even got to that bit, we missed in the opening couple of minutes, we had that strange new way of presenting the text at the beginning. So we didn't get a crawl like we do in the chapters, but we did... But we got some text. And then we had that... I really liked... What's her name? Madame Proxima.
Yeah.
She sort of rose up to like a giant centipede. And I really liked that because, again, it took me back to sort of the Jim Henson... like Dark Crystal kind of puppetry. I thought that was a really, really good start. Also, I must say at this stage, the whole film, I don't know if it was projection, but I found the cinematography was really shoddy, and it was a very ugly looking Star Wars film.
It was so dark in Austria in 3D. That's why I really had to go and see it again to even see. Yeah. I mean, when it was the scenes with... Paul Bettany and later in the film, it was only on the second viewing that I actually saw the scars on his face.
Exactly. Yeah. I couldn't see it. And I was,
that's how bad the 3D.
But I think the whole film was just because I thought it was initially my projection, but I've looked into it and other viewers have had the same experience. Just rubbish, dimly lit cinematography. And I was amazed to learn it was from the same cinematographer as the guy that shot Arrival, which was a gorgeous looking film.
I really don't know. It could be projection issues. I don't know, but it did definitely needed brightening up.
So he gets off Corellia. Corellia was actually drawn from the old expanded universe. Quite a few things are being drawn on from there. So it's his home planet and like a renowned shipbuilding. Where he gets off of there, and he tries to be a pilot in the Imperial.
I would have loved to have seen at least a little bit of that, because that would have been hilarious, but they just, it's literally one sentence, isn't it? Oh, I was kicked out of there.
That's probably where all the directors that got fired, that they probably shot a lot of like Police Academy style stuff of hand.
You reckon?
I don't know if we'll ever know what they shot, but you're right. It would have been good to see like Han.
Yeah, because suddenly it says, doesn't it say 3 years?
3 years.
And then he's on Mimban in the middle of a war. Go on, I was going to say, because there's another one of these things that makes no sense coming up in a second when he's introduced to Dryden Boss.
Yeah. But at that point, we're introduced to Tobias Beckett, the least Star Warsy sounding man in the galaxy.
Oh, sorry, yes, Tobias Beckett, not Dryden Boss.
Is that his name, yeah. Tobias Beckett? You're right. That's not a Star Wars name. That's a posh bloke name.
I mean, Luke Skywalker's borderline not very spacey. Like Skywalker but Luke is like the most normal name until you get Tobias Beckett, Toby Beckett.
Exactly. Yeah, he's a columnist in The Independent with a name like that. Yeah.
But you meet him and his crew, who are, which I actually quite like. They kind of infiltrated the Imperial ranks to pull a con.
Okay. What was the con? Why were they there?
They were trying to steal that ship that they took off in.
Oh, was that what they were doing? Because I didn't realise that.
How did they get there
in the first place then to steal?
They must have just, because they were all in Imperial clothing. I mean, he was pretending to be an officer, wasn't he? So I imagine.
So they came in one ship to then leave and steal on another.
Well, no, because if you remember, or if you think that the ship that they stole was the ship that they took to that planet where they were trying to steal the thing off the train thing.
Okay.
So they needed that type of ship to steal the train thing, garage.
But I did like a couple of those scenes when it cut forward 3 years, because it was very reminiscent of like World War One movies, because it was like they were like in the trenches, weren't they? And there was one shot that was really reminiscent of Paths of Glory. I don't know if either of you two have ever seen that. But they're the kind of things that I like looking out for in these Star Wars films.
Yeah. And obviously we got where he met Chewie and saved him from slavery.
And that's the life debt.
Yes.
That's it. Okay, makes sense. Yeah. That was good. It was nicely handled.
Lots of big callback to Return of the Jedi, where he ends up in like a cell and Chewbacca's in there.
When he's blind.
Yeah. Rather than trying to hit him in that one, he gives him a big cuddle.
Right, yes.
I like Chewbacca in this because you got to learn a little bit more about him. There was actually some Chewbacca character development. It wasn't a lot, but there was something.
First viewing of his wife since the holiday specials. No mention of Wookiee Life Day, but we did see some of his family. So, but yeah, so we obviously saw how he freed him. I liked it that he could speak sort of basic Wookiee.
Yeah, which
did sound awful, though. Every time he spoke Wookiee, it was like, that was a bit cringy.
It's a bit embarrassing. I'm glad they didn't stretch it out for too long.
No. Yeah. And then they're off, aren't they? Then it's off to do the heist, effectively, this is a heist film.
Yeah. Well, it's like a sort of Star Wars. I mean, Star Wars has always had its roots in westerns, but this one really felt like a western. Because, you had like the train robbery and other things that happen later towards the end, which I'll get onto in a minute. But yeah, this was a decent set piece.
Yeah, it was quite cool to watch, and Han and Chewie proving themselves to their new crew, although it doesn't all go according to plan, obviously.
When Woody Harrelson's wife sacrifices herself.
Yeah, and the little alien guy.
The guy in the spaceship. But a lot of that stuff didn't make didn't make sense. When Thandie Newton, who plays Val, when she kills herself, that seemed a bit kind of sudden.
Exactly.
And what she was doing, a lot of the stuff they were doing on that heist, and the fact that there was even a train there, because in this universe, you don't need to move stuff by train.
Even on the trailer, why do they need a fucking train?
So that whole thing, although the idea of the heist, I'm going to keep going back to this, that the overall sort of story was good, but some of the execution and the way they went about it and how they got from A to B and some of the things they did in that story were really poorly thought out. But yeah, as you said, Dave, there was no need for a train. I certainly didn't. Thandie Newton going the way she did seem ridiculous.
She hadn't been around long enough for us to really care about, and same as like the little monkey chap. It was just they introduced them, they get their scene.
He was there he had to go so Han could pilot.
Right, yes. And he also had to be there to sell an extra toy as well, I guess.
obviously that goes tits. What are the Outlaws called? They've got a silly name, haven't they?
Crimson Dawn.
No, the outlaws, the people who turn up and thwart them.
What, the ones that again? Yeah, the big. Yeah, I can't remember what they were called.
Yeah, well, I've seen it twice and I can't remember what they were called. It didn't roll off the tongue, did it?
Mm. No, it wasn't very catchy. Anyway, yes.
But when that robbery fails, there's a thing that happens that
Enfist Nest.
That's it. Yeah. Incest Nest.
Yeah, again, yeah. What a stupid name. What? Say it again, Steve. Enfist.
Enfist Nest.
Enfist Nest. Yeah, I don't know. It's not great, no. Is it? But there's a little speech that happens when that all goes tits up, when Woody Harrelson says and mentions for the first time Dryden Voss, and says that you don't want to come on his radar. Because if you double cross him in any way, you know, they'll hunt. They'll send out a team to hunt you across the galaxy and all this kind of stuff. And then, as we'll get to later in the film, something happens that completely negates all of that.
Because you've got the benefit of seeing it twice now, haven't you? So you've probably picked up on those little things that are revealed later on.
Well, yeah, because later on in the film, he shoots two of his blokes and steals from him. Yeah. So, but at the beginning of the film, he won't even disappoint him. Even disappointing him is going to get you killed. But shooting his guards and stealing from him an hour later is absolutely fine. Okay, but it's little things like that, though, that surely if you're spending $150 million on a film, the script supervisor would be saying, yeah, can we just want to check this? Anyway, so where do we head to next?
Where we meet Dryden Voss, isn't it? Once the failure of the heist happens, we meet Dryden Voss and we are reintroduced to Kira, who has got off of Corellia. And we don't really know what her involvement is with Dryden Voss at this point. Don't know if she's just a bit of arm candy, but it becomes clear that she's
something
like
seedy, though, isn't it? It's hinted at that you know, she's basically.
But she's also quite high up. She's also quite well respected and in charge of some things. But he's also sleazing her right up.
This is the main reshoot, isn't it? Because Dryden Voss originally was a CGI character.
Oh, is that right? Well, also that makes sense because Paul Bettany is a Ron Howard regular, isn't he? He's been in five of his films.
The guy cast couldn't do the reshoots, so all of the Paul Bettany stuff was added in.
Okay, he's a great actor. I've always been a big fan of Paul Bettany. Oh,
really good. So, I mean, the thing that carried this film for me, I was going to get to this later, is the cast for me. I thought they were all really, really good. I love seeing Paul Bettany. He's a brilliant villain.
Yeah, I'd agree. I wish that they'd had more time. I agree about the cast for the most part, other than Emilia Clarke, who I mentioned earlier. But yeah, other than that, they're all good.
So they're sort of given a lifeline, if you like, to go out and bring back whatever the what's the MacGuffin? What's that stuff called?
Coaxium.
There we go.
Spaceship fuel.
Spaceship fuel, and they come up with this really convoluted plan to go and steal it from below the spice mines of Kessel, which I was waiting for. We all knew that was coming.
Yeah.
They need to go and get a ship. And as soon as they said that, we knew that we were going to be meeting Lando.
Sure. But then they did do they pulled the rug out a little bit, didn't they? Because we assumed he was going to win the Falcon there and then straight away.
Yeah.
So that they didn't, they changed the expectations a little bit.
Yeah. I will say, all that money and stuff, that Sabacc game, did you ever feel that there was anything at stake? Because it did, do you know what I mean? Because we don't know how to play Sabacc, but nor do they. It isn't an actual thing, surely, because it made no sense. There wasn't any tension there.
Do you know what I thought of when that came on? What? You know that early Only Fools and Horses episode where Del Boy and Boise are playing each other at cards and they're cheating each other?
Yeah, I remember that.
I just thought about that. thought, this is pretty much the same thing. Cards up their sleeves cheating.
I would have much preferred them to have actually just played poker or something, or you know, a slight variation where at least the audience can engage with what's happening.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Like, I don't know.
Haven't they done that in Casino Royale and stuff?
Exactly. I don't have to play Baccarat, but in so many Bond films, you kind of know what the stakes are and you can kind of get engaged a little bit more without knowing what the rules are. But or
just having funny symbols on some pieces of cardboard and going, you needed the squiddly bongo nine.
Or Hans dice. I know that's become a MacGuffin as well.
Anyway,
all I've got in my notes is it just says Sabak is dumb.
But then I suppose if they just put in a card game that we understood, like just called it Space Poker, everyone would be going, well, it's just poker. That's not very Star Wars.
I guess, you can't win either way with these
things.
You can't
win, maybe, yeah.
or if they had a scene where, like, it was just explaining the rules of Sabak and what the cards were and everything, then people were like, oh, that's dragging this out a bit, isn't it? We don't need to know all this. So it's one of them ones. We've known that Sabak is a card game in Star Wars for ages, and they just had to roll with it, really.
I'd never heard of it because it's not in a film. But presumably,
not.
I don't think so. Presumably, it's only in it's in comics and
it's definitely in the other books. It's definitely in canon before this film. I'm sure it is because I already knew that name and that word.
Yeah. So we pick up Lando and his droid.
Oh God!
Right. Let's get to the Jesus. Droid because I'm guessing this is because I saw a tweet, Dave, listing the third most annoying character in Star Wars history, and I straight away I thought I know exactly who that is.
It was the the fucking social justice droid, the patronizing portrayal of a feminist robot. Third worst.
That walked like it had a big ass.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, some of the lines hit and I liked, but most of them I thought, oh, God.
Every line in the cinema when I saw that fell flat. It was awkward. It was uncomfortable. Yeah, the third, I genuinely believe, the third worst Star Wars character ever. Jar Jar Binks being number one. And then, you know, remember Dexter Jetster, who ran the big guy that ran the 50s diner.
Yeah.
Can we just touch upon, because the actress, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, have either of you seen Fleabag? Because I think this, if you have seen Fleabag, your perception of that character will be, I suspect, slightly different.
No, I
haven't seen it. No,
I think all the episodes are on iPlayer at the moment. It is absolutely fantastic because she's a proper ballsy, independent woman in that, and she's very, very funny.
I don't doubt it. Right. I've heard only good things about Fleabag.
Yeah,
but I
could hear Fleabag that kind of threw me a little bit, and I can see why people got angry about her robot's character, but it didn't annoy me for that reason, because I really like her.
I just found it very weird that they went with that angle, because I know there's been this backlash with The Last Jedi and even with The Force Awakens a couple of years ago about the whole Mary Sue issue and how there is this sort of social justice agenda, which I never really bought into all that. I just thought it was daft old men complaining that things were different than they were 35 years ago. But this was like a parody of a feminist, like the kind of person.
Well, that's what at one point I thought, are they actually making fun of these
people? I couldn't tell.
By going so over the top with it.
Because there was that line when Lando says, can I get you anything? And she goes, yeah, how about equal rights? And they're in the middle of a fucking battle sequence when that's happening. It's just, it was so awkward.
There was sexual tension as well, which was weird.
If they wanted to play it straight, there's so many other ways they could have had her starting like a droid rebellion on Kessel.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. And of course, the other thing is, that robot, what was her name? L...
L3.
Yeah. She's now part of the Falcon as well, because she uploaded her personality and her memory into the Falcon, so she's now forever part of that. And, I don't want to become one of those guys, but that has...
Yeah, Dave, you'll get yourself on trouble.
I probably will, won't I? Yeah, I'll probably stay quiet then. It's not worth it.
Did anyone notice in this bit as well, Lando, when he came out to act as Kira's guard when they were pretending Solo, when Han and Chewie were actual prisoners they were transferring, same outfit, same same thing he was wearing when he was a prison guard at Jabba's palace.
Yeah, I saw that. Nice little touch.
Little Easter egg. There's quite a few little Easter eggs.
Always is, though, isn't there? But they were.
They always are. But I found these ones less forced than the ones in Rogue One.
Yeah.
These were more like just like blink and you'll miss them, and if you get it, that's fine. Rather than say, for example, in Rogue One, we had the guy who said, "He doesn't like you. I don't like you either." What's that character called, Steve? Dr. Cornelius something, I think.
But it's Dr. Ezvan and Ponda Baba.
That's it. And he was in it, and I just thought that bit was a bit forced, but none of that in Solo.
No. We have the heist, they steal the coaxium, L3 is blown up to pieces, Lando cops a laser, and we head back to the Falcon to do the Kessel Run.
This was the bit that I'd probably like least.
It was the thing was, and I'm going to relate this to Jurassic Park a little bit, and you'll see why. So in Jurassic Park, when the original Jurassic Park was released, as far as science knew then, dinosaurs didn't have feathers. And then, now, we kind of know that dinosaurs had feathers. You can't retcon Jurassic Park, but then all kinds of sciencey people go now, oh, well, dinosaurs should have had feathers, so Jurassic World looks rubbish, looks stupid, doesn't look right. And it's like, yeah, but then how can you do that? You know, plus dinosaurs would look less intimidating if they had feathers, let's be honest.
Yeah.
So in A New Hope, you get a throwaway line about doing the Kessel Run in under 12 parsecs or 12 parsecs. And George Lucas has probably not even thought about this and has just thought, parsecs, it sounds like a spacey kind of term for time. You know, why would you just see parsec, right, that'll do. And then it turns out that parsec is a measure of distance. And then if you're going to put the Kessel Run in a film, you've got to explain how he's done it in less distance rather than less time. I mean, I suppose you could have just gone, no, in Star Wars it's time. A parsec is time. Like different words have multiple meanings.
Sure.
Star Wars, a parsec is time,
and a par
meter is distance. Get over it. But they didn't. They tried to explain it, and they took a shortcut.
That's exactly what it is. It's a shortcut, and you're right. It was pretty difficult to see what was going on during this sequence because it was very fast-paced, and again there were no stakes because we know the outcome, we know he does it.
That's the problem with this film is, you know, there's not really any stakes because you know ultimately the Han, Chewie, Lando and the Falcon survive, and everybody else you don't overly care that much about. I liked Beckett as a character. I thought he was quite good. I would have quite liked to have seen him stick around for another film. As he got killed off, I don't really care that much.
Plus Han shot first.
Yeah, yes. It was that.
That was totally to do with that.
Completely.
That was massive.
You know
massive.
What I mean? It's you know the main characters are getting it. In Rogue One, it was completely different because Rogue One was straight into A New Hope, and so they'd have to explain where all these characters are in A New Hope. Oh no, we'll just kill them all.
Yeah.
Which was quite brave because there were some quite good characters I thought in Rogue One. And they just got rid of all of them.
Well, they killed most of the ones off in this as well, which I actually didn't mind because it's that having people be expendable, because in the original ones, it's people, you know, for all the war and fighting and stuff, there wasn't a huge number of people being killed. So I thought it was good to see off quite a lot of characters.
In the originals, it was just your Star Wars equivalent of red shirts, just background guys and stormtroopers that get killed.
Yeah.
We get out of the Kessel Run and we go to this planet where they refine the space petrol. Then Effin's nests turn back up again, don't they? And there's all kinds of double crossing with Dryden Voss and Beckett and everything going on, double and triple crossing and all that kind of thing.
I thought it was a bit weird that kind of Enfys Nest suddenly turned out to be like a 16-year-old girl.
It was like when she took the helmet off. It was like, you're meant to know who she is. That's what
I got that feeling. Like it's a big reveal.
It's like, I ain't got a clue who that is.
I didn't have a clue who she was.
But they do seem to be building this thing, or putting hints in this one of this wider rebellion growing, which I suppose it's set apparently about 10 years before A New Hope and Rogue One. So the rebellion is starting to grow and form, and people are starting to fight back against the Empire.
And I noticed that on that planet with the Empress Nest, when they all remove their masks, Warwick Davis not signing on for another week.
playing the same character he played in A Phantom Menace, apparently.
Oh, do you think it's the same character that was at
No, apparently it is.
Is it really? Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Weasel.
Well, we'll get onto it in a minute, but there are more than one Phantom Menace callbacks in this film then. Interesting,
yes.
Right.
Well, to be fair, because we did... Do you remember one of the quizzes I asked about how much Warwick Davis got paid originally? Wasn't it like 25 quid?
Well, he was just a child though, wasn't he, when he paid...
I know, but at the end of the day, do you know what? I think it's actually pretty fair and decent of them to have finally given him some actual Star Wars money from Star Wars themselves, rather than having to sign signatures and go, do you know what I mean?
I do, yeah.
Because 25 quid was a disgrace.
Although, mind you, he probably got paid better for Willow, which was, of course, also directed by...
Gorgeous George.
Ron Howard.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Of course it was.
He did Willow.
Bloody hell, he's been around a long time, isn't he, Ron Howard?
Well, since American Graffiti. Which is, again, I mean, there's so many connections between Ron Howard and George Lucas and therefore Star Wars.
Yes.
Yeah. But anyway, sorry. So Warwick Davis turns up. And then, so those guys, they are the rebellion. They are the start of the whole thing.
They did turn them round pretty quickly, though, didn't they? For people that they've been, like, having a proper tear-up with.
Yeah.
Suddenly they were all best mates.
Good guys, yeah.
That was a big shift in attitude and kind of outlook for these criminals and, you know, outlaws who were out stealing. Suddenly, a girl turns up and goes, oh, hello, we're really good people. And then they go, oh, okay then.
Yeah.
It was a bit.
I suppose what it, because they made a thing of it as well with Han. I think Kira called him a good guy. And I think it was trying to sow the seeds that he is deep down a good guy. He's not just a scoundrel. He is essentially a good guy. He will do right for the right people in the end, as we see in A New Hope, where he starts out as a smuggler who's just ferrying these people around for a payday, pisses off at the first sign of real trouble, and then comes back to save the day because he's a good guy.
Yeah.
So where are we next? We're back to... this is where all the switcheroo stuff happens, isn't it?
Yeah, the Ocean's 11 part of the film.
Yeah.
There's the switching of different things. And yeah, I mean, exactly. Dryden Foss as a character I thought was quite good, and then they killed him off as well in this next bit. It's quite interesting. I thought they were going to call the crime syndicate or something Black Sun, which is what the big one is from the expanded universe, and everything is called Black Sun. It's like the galaxy wide crime syndicate that rivals the Hutts and everything, but no, he didn't. But anyway,
did you get a feel up to this point, and when it was building to all this, did you get the feeling throughout that Emilia Clarke's character was a wrong'un?
No,
I did.
I hadn't considered it, but when it did happen, it didn't come as a huge surprise. Okay. Because you do it...
Just the way they kept glancing at that tattoo and stuff, and the way that they talked about indoctrination into Crimson Sun, whatever it is, and I just thought, yeah, she's going to turn out to be a wrong'un.
Well, she knows the consequences of going against Crimson Sun, and who we find out shortly to be its kind of overlord, so to speak, and she knows what will happen to her if she does disobey what she's meant to be doing. So she can't really. It's not that she wants to, it's that she has to.
Well, and shall we say it then?
Who
pops up at the end?
Yes, Darth Maul.
A little cameo from Darth Maul, which...
Was it the same guy? Because he's...
No, it was... it was Ray Park playing a different voice guy.
They will never get Serafinovich back, because he's gone... He's, slagged it, the whole Phantom Menace experience off the last 20 years. Yeah. So I doubt whether we'll get him again.
because he didn't sound right.
No.
And yeah. I just, there was something, it slightly threw me.
Apparently it's the same guy that voices him in the animated series.
Yeah, okay. I mean, there's obviously people who haven't seen any of the animated series think, Darth Maul, hang on, he got chopped in half. He did, but because he's really evil and also a really popular character, they brought him back for first Clone Wars and then Rebels, in which he was quite a central villain in both of those. And it worked quite well. Like, you think it's ridiculous, he got chopped in half, why bring him back? But his character arc in both in Clone Wars and in Rebels works really. I don't know if any reviewers have seen them, but it does work really well.
I knew that he was in that Rebel series, but even so, when he popped up at the end, and again, to no applause or reaction in the audience whatsoever, I know there's only about 15 of us there, but you would have thought a big reveal like that would have had a bit of a sharp intake of breath, of surprise.
It got a reaction in the cinema.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's something.
Did either of you know that was going to happen?
Not at all. No.
Someone had spoiled it for me that a major prequel character returns in this, but because of seeing Rebels, even though I know that Rebel, knowing roughly in the timeline when his actually Rebels has been out now, and if you haven't seen it now, you probably won't. So in Rebels, he's killed by Obi-Wan Kenobi. Basically, in Rebels, when he comes into it, he tries turning Ezra Bridger to the dark side. He's also looking for Obi-Wan Kenobi to take his revenge on him for cutting off his legs, and he finds him on Tatooine. And they have a short lightsaber battle, and Obi-Wan kills him. And the end of that episode, you kind of see like a 13, 14 year old Luke Skywalker in the distance.
Oh, okay.
So that implies that that's about 4 or 5 years down the line from this. Because Luke's obviously 18 in A New Hope, and this is set 10 years before A New Hope. So I thought, because knowing that he's been killed in Rebels, I thought. And when someone said a prequel character returns, I thought, well, it won't be him. Then I was starting to think, well, who on earth would it be? A major prequel character. It's not going to be someone who's just... I just thought it was going to be Jimmy Schmidt again.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because you're right.
What, so he's already been chopped in half?
Yeah, exactly. So it took me...
But you didn't see him stood up, did you?
No, he was sat down.
Was he like on wheels?
No, he's got like robot legs. He's got robot legs.
So, Paul, were you therefore confused about the timeline? Because I could not quite work out what was going on. It took me an hour chatting to my mates to work out where that sat.
I didn't get the timeline until after the film, where I read online somewhere. Someone said, well, in the Star Wars film, the original films, apparently someone says that Chewbacca's 200, and in this one, Han says he's 190, so it must be about 10 years before.
Okay. But then the thing is, though, it's all very well and good, but now... physically, Darth Maul falls down that pit, and what? He just pulls himself onto a spaceship. I mean, how does he get away without any legs?
Well, let me find out the official answer in canon for you, as I've got nothing.
Yes, please, Steve, because you are in charge of Star Wars canon.
Because obviously the canon has changed, but it's all to do with being very evil and dark side stuff. I mean, the Force is pretty impressive, really, isn't it?
I suppose.
You're not impressed by the Force?
No, it's all right.
Hang on, Steve, I'm gonna try and use the Force to remove your gallstones.
If you could.
Hang on.
Use the Force.
That'd be bloody handy, wouldn't it? Just whip them out.
So in canon, because on Star Wars' kind of Wikipedia database, which is brilliantly called Wookiepedia, they now have a Legends side of it, which is all the old expanded universe, and a canon side, which is everything that Disney has kept. So where is he getting chopped in half? So Maul attempted to make the young Jedi. Kenobi managed to calm himself, use the Force to jump back up and summon the night.
He jumps back up.
No, this is me trying to find the right play.
Oh, sorry.
Through his hate and will to survive, Maul used the Force to grab an air vent. This is his top half of his body.
Okay.
As he was tumbling down that reactor shaft, he managed to make it to a trash container. His shattered body was dumped in the junkyard world of whatever that is. He lived in the bowels of a planet and had his legs replaced by six-legged apparatus, which allowed him to walk again. So basically, he
said now he's like a kind of a most of a spider.
Yeah,
like his hatred managed to make him kind of heal himself in a twisted way and stop him dying, and then he got some robot legs.
That's interesting, because wasn't there a theory for a while that General Grievous from Revenge of the Sith was going to be Darth Maul reincarnated? And he was a kind of like a spider thing, wasn't he? He had like these giant robot legs.
I think you're right there, yeah.
Okay, all right, well, that kind of makes... So he dies, he has his legs cut off on Naboo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sort of ends up like in this trash
junk
thing,
planet.
Passing out, taken to a junk planet by the thing, and somebody there gives him some legs, and then he goes on to be quite a nasty man still. I think in Clone Wars, the Emperor still uses him for things, and then he sort of fights against the Emperor and etc. But I mean, his character arc when he comes back into Clone Wars and into Rebels is really good, and you don't really mind the bit of silliness in him surviving. And hopefully that'll be the same in this.
We'll have to wait and see. Yeah. Because like,
basically, what a few people have suggested online, and I kind of agree with, is the guy who has overseen sort of Rebels and some of the TV shows, Dave Filoni, should be given basically the Kevin Feige role from the MCU in this, of the Star Wars universe, just be sort of overseeing all films.
Like a showrunner, but yeah.
Yeah, because he did such a good job on Rebels, which I still think was brilliant.
Because there is talk about Kathleen Kennedy possibly not doing some more because the reaction has been so negative.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, have you seen that? I mean, there was that whole Boycott Solo thing, and there's been, I mean, a lot of backlash I've seen, especially about all the kind of the feminism stuff with the robot. I can kind of see where they're coming from for some of it, but a lot of it has just been ridiculous. At the end of the day, it's just a space adventure film.
Well, exactly, and it isn't aimed at old men like us three. Really,
no.
I mean, there always will be to a degree, because we were the initial, we were, you know, kids. I know you're a bit younger than us, Steve, a lot younger than us, but we were kids when it came out. But there's a whole new generation, two generations, really, that it's going to be aimed for. But I don't know, because it was such a... how did Solo actually end? So we see Darth Maul, and then they just, fly... He hangs his dice up, and then the credits come up.
Well, they because earlier on in the film, Beckett says about a big time gangster putting a job together on Tatooine.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
So yes. At the end,
we know it's Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah. Oh
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But at the end of this, he says to Chewie, basically, let's go to Tatooine, do this big job.
And they allude. Multiple times he says about, you know, you don't want to be living with a price on your head.
No.
And then he mentions the Tatooine job. And so those two things are the next film. Surely he'll be A, him going to Tatooine, B, why it go, not that it goes tits, it will go tits because Solo doesn't follow through because he's being a good guy again. Mm-hmm. On whatever the job it might be. And then he's got a price on his head.
Yeah. So that brings to the end. So what we mentioned callbacks earlier, what callbacks did we see to other things in Star Wars? We've mentioned the dice, we obviously know Darth Maul, we've mentioned Lando's outfit.
There's one of the, you mentioned it earlier in the quiz, Steve. What's the thing that lives inside the stomach of the giant worm that lives in the asteroid? What are those things called?
Minots.
Yeah, there's one of them in Paul Bettany's office in a jar. Which I didn't see on the screen, but I've since seen a still of it on the internet.
Bosk is mentioned, one of the bounty hunters from Empire Strikes Back, when Beckett's crew take on Han and Chewie, and his wife says, couldn't we have got the Something Sisters or Bosk?
Right, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
Mm.
What else?
So, Dave, you didn't mind it?
It's the same thing as Rogue One. I just found it very underwhelming, particularly the first two acts, and then it found its feet in the third act, and it became a lot more enjoyable and engaging and fun. But I will say, actually, it despite all that, it zipped along pretty nicely, because it's a 2 hour, 10 minute movie?
Two and a quarter,
yeah. And it did not seem that at all. It felt like a sort of 90 minuter. which is always a good sign. But I, as always, I definitely want to see it again. I'm just amazed at how ugly the whole thing looked, considering what a, you know, what a beautiful universe the Star Wars galaxy is, and the things that they can do with it. Yeah, definitely needs a rewatch.
Despite all the faults I've pulled up, as I said earlier, that kind of the overarching kind of story, I just thought was really good. Some of the execution and the minutiae was poorly handled, but I think this is probably my, you're going to hate me for this, this is probably my favourite outside of the original trilogy.
That is surprising.
I couldn't wait to see it again. In the second time round, I enjoyed it probably more, but it did highlight the flaws, and perhaps some of those were to do with chopping and changing. But it just seemed there was some very lazy storytelling.
Do you think maybe they should have waited till the December to release this?
Yes,
so
definitely.
Given them a bit more shooting time, then time to edit it, post production, and all that, and maybe
It's still quite close to Infinity War as well.
There is that, and Deadpool's just come out.
Yeah. And, you know, with the cinema being so expensive, it's sometimes hard to cram in all these films in such a short space of time. I know people can have unlimited cards or whatever now, but, you know, it's a lot of... If you don't have those, there's a lot of films to cram into a short space of time when, if you don't go on, like, a Meerkat Movies Tuesday or something, it can be a tenner a go per person.
Well, it was 10 quid for 2D in Hastings and €13 for 3D in Vienna.
Yeah.
So, Steve, I mean, is it fair enough to compare... Because we've now had 4 Star Wars films in 2.5 years. Since December 2015, we've had Force Awakens, then Rogue One, then Last Jedi, and now we've got Solo. 2.5 years, 4 films, which is a lot, really, because there was a 3-year gap between Star Wars and Empire back in the day. So, okay to compare it to, say, the Marvel films. Now, I've not seen many of them, but when did they start to sort of get good? Were they good straight away? Because I understand that...
Hulk or the Incredible Hulk, whichever one it was, with Edward Norton, was the first MCU film, I think.
Yes.
That was terrible.
Yeah.
After that...
I really like that. I don't know why people keep saying it's terrible.
After that, from Iron Man, they started being good from Iron
even,
Man.
Because I heard really shitty things about Thor and Iron Man 2.
Oh, yeah, some of them aren't great, but sort of there's more good than bad.
It's too early to completely write off, for anyone to write off these new Star Wars films.
Yeah, especially when really none of them have been terrible.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Yeah, none of them have been terrible.
I'm looking forward to seeing the TV stuff.
Yeah.
So you got to remember, the MCU has a lot of not lower quality, but a lot of TV stuff, it's almost like a pyramid. You've got your third tier, your second tier, and your top tier. Star Wars doesn't really have that yet. They're trying to pitch everything at the top tier. When things kind of shuffle into place down the line, maybe we'll have a clearer picture.
I think you're absolutely right. And anything that's been, any issues or anything unresolved might get answered in later films. But it'll be really good.
A lot of it could be answered in TV, couldn't it?
Exactly,
Join up the dots, fill in some holes, plug some gaps here and there. Compared to the MCU, Star Wars is a much bigger sandbox to play in.
Oh, it's huge. I read the other day there are apparently, I think, 89 million inhabited systems in the Star Wars galaxy. So you can never run out of stories and ideas. You can just keep making things up. And it would be...
Archaeologists will be listening to this podcast laughing at us. when they're on episode 489.
And Anthony Daniels is still in them.
Yeah.
Because he was in this. Did you know that?
He was in this.
He's in Solo. I don't know how he... He must have photos of Kathleen Kennedy. Keeps bribing her.
But yeah, anyway, that is it for this Solo Star Wars Story special. We'll see you in 18 months for episode 9, yet to be titled.
But the final film in that Skywalker saga 9-film series. But thank you all for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the podcast.
The Failed Critics podcast is presented by Steve Norman and Owen Hughes, with contributions from different guests every week, with original music provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com from the track The Bandit, remixed by James Yule, who you can find at jamesyule.com. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Failed Critics, on iTunes and all good podcast apps, or you can check us out at failedcritics.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave a rating or a review. And why not check out our sister podcasts, Character Unlock and Field & Mullinger's Underground Nights, from the Failed Media Network of podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.